Ireland's ambassador to the U.S. Daniel Mulhall has been Ireland's ambassador to the United States for 2 years now. Before that, he was Ireland's ambassador to the United Kingdom and campaigned against the Brexit vote. Ambassador Mulhall is in Maine right now for a 2-day visit, which includes a trip to the Maine Public Studios in Portland. I'm Jennifer Rooks. We will ask the ambassador about his reaction to the election of Boris Johnson in the UK, how Brexit will affect the Emerald Isle, and about Ireland's relationship with the people of Maine. We'll also delve into his love of Irish poetry and excitement about golfer Shane Lowry. What are your questions for Ireland's chief diplomat to the United States? Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. Maine has had longtime ties to Ireland through family connections as well as education and trade. Today we'll learn more about these relationships and hear about the latest on Brexit and how it might affect Ireland. Joining me in the studio is Ireland's ambassador to the United States, Daniel Mulhall. He has been a top diplomat for a long time, previously serving as Ireland's ambassador to the United Kingdom, as well as to Germany and Malaysia. As always, we want to hear from you. Do you have questions for the ambassador about Ireland? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to the Maine Calling Facebook page. Ambassador Mulhall, welcome to Maine. You have some nice Irish weather for your, your visit.
It's great to be here. I've experienced all the different Maine weathers. It was very hot when I first arrived on Sunday, and it's a bit damp today. We would call this a soft day.
A soft day.
Rather than anything more than that. It was very pleasant. I was out today on Long Island visiting that island with such a rich Irish heritage. I met about 40 members of the Murphy family there, and I believe I've met Murphys all over the place, and of course it's probably one of the top 3 or 4 names in Ireland, but I've never met so many Murphys in the one place before.
That's wonderful. Well, I want to begin today with the news that Boris Johnson has been elected the leader of the Conservative Party in the UK, setting him up to become Prime Minister tomorrow. He has promised to extricate the UK from the European Union by October 31st. You are the former Irish ambassador to the UK. You campaigned against Brexit. What is your reaction to Johnson's election?
Well, I have to say, first of all, that I knew Boris Johnson back in the early 90s when I was the Irish government's press spokesman in Brussels. And for 4 years, he was a Daily Telegraph journalist. So he was one of the British journalists. And the Irish press spokesman had a lot of contact with British journalists. And I was especially friendly with Boris Johnson. I probably spoke to him 3 or 4 times a week for 4 years. And then in London, he was mayor of London when I first got there. And then he was foreign secretary when by the time I left. So we had a lot of contact. And I wish him well in his new role. I have a personal connection with him going back 25 years. But of course, from an Irish point of view, our concern is to minimize the damage that Brexit will do to Ireland. So our clear aim the last 3 years since that referendum in 2016 has been to minimize the economic impact on Ireland, because we have a very important economic relationship with the UK. It's our nearest neighbour, and we don't want to see that economic relationship damaged in any way, because it will be damaging to our economy and to theirs. And therefore, we want to keep them as closely aligned as possible to the European Union. And secondly, of course, we need to protect the peace process in Northern Ireland, and therefore we are determined to maintain an open border on the island of Ireland. And we now have 3 months before the deadline for Britain's departure from the European Union. And the important thing is that Britain should leave the EU in an orderly fashion, which will benefit Britain and benefit the European Union. If it crashes out in a disorderly fashion, it will cause untold damage to the economies of Britain, Ireland, and the European Union. And nobody should want that to happen. And I'm hopeful that some kind of arrangement will be arrived at to enable Britain to leave in a sensible, pragmatic fashion.
Let's talk about that border between Ireland and Northern Ireland. I was in Ireland more than 20 years ago, and that border was not an easy border then. There was a checkpoint, and there yes. were guards. That's not the case today. No. How would you characterize what the border is like today?
I characterize it as on Sunday, I crossed the border from New Hampshire to Maine, and I would characterize it as more or less the same as that. In other words, the border in Ireland, as the border in New Hampshire, Maine, goes through villages, goes through homes, goes through farmyards, goes through open fields. So it's not a border that has any physical basis. And today, you cross that border and you don't even know you've crossed the border until you start to see the signposts are different on the streets and so on. But we want to keep it that way because that is one of the dividends of the peace process, which, of course, was helped into existence by the great contribution of Senator George Mitchell and the then US government, which put a lot of effort into delivering peace to Ireland. We want to preserve that peace.
That border, though, that is one of the sticking points, isn't it? The future is not certain.
No, it is. The problem is, it's got nothing to do with the movement of people. Nobody wants to control the movement of people across the border. In fact, there's a common travel area between Britain and Ireland, which means British people don't require passports to come to Ireland. Irish people don't require passports to go to Britain. You're entitled to live and work in the other country. And that's going to continue come what may. The problem has to do with customs controls. If the UK leaves the EU, leaves the customs union and leaves the single market, it will mean that at some point Northern Ireland will be in a different customs regime from the rest of Ireland and a different regulatory regime from the rest of Ireland. And that will create problems for the movement of goods between North and South in Ireland. And that's the kind of thing we want to avoid. And that's why we've insisted on this insurance policy to guarantee that there will never be any border checks, never be any hard border on the island of Ireland. And that's still our aim. And in that aim, we are supported by our European Union colleagues.
You've also talked about the notion that Brexit has some potential upsides for Ireland. What are those?
Well, the upsides, first of all, I should say that there's probably no version of Brexit that is an overall gain for Ireland. So there's a loss anyway. But what's called a soft Brexit, a sort of a more controlled Brexit, would minimise the damage for Ireland. A hard Brexit would increase that scale of damage. The upside is that as the UK leaves the European Union, Ireland will become the only English-speaking country in the European Union, the only major common law jurisdiction. So from the point of view of American companies looking for a base within the European Union as part of their global operations, they will now look more favourably on Ireland and less favourably on the UK because Ireland offers them access, complete access and free access to all markets of the European Union. That's 27 countries, which after the UK leaves will still have a population of 450 million. So we'll be the biggest market in the world. And that will be a big advantage for US companies. And therefore, we expect that we will gain. Already, we reckon that about 70 companies have moved to Ireland or moved part of their operations to Ireland because of Brexit. And in the future, we estimate that we will have further companies coming into Ireland in order to benefit from our position within the European Union, the European single market and the Eurozone.
And already Ireland is, my understanding, is strengthening its ties with the United States,
yes.
That your diplomatic corps is becoming larger and
yes.
You're moving into a larger embassy.
We are. We have a policy called Global Ireland, which is we're trying to double Ireland's global footprint over the next 7 years. So when I first joined the Foreign Service, we had 25 embassies and consulates. By 2026, we expect to have 106 embassies and consulates. So in the space of my career, 40 years or so, we will have quadrupled the size of our diplomatic service, of our embassy network. And we'll also have, we're also putting extra people in. So for example, we have currently got 6 consulates in the United States. We're adding 2 more, one in Los Angeles this year and one in Miami next year. By that time, we'll have 8 consulates. We've also increased the size of our consulates and we're increasing the size of our embassy. We just last year bought a new building, which will almost double the space we have available to us. So we are stepping up to try and take a more active role in Ireland-US relations, but also in European-US relations, because we think we can be a bridgehead between the United States and the European Union as the country in Europe that has the closest set of historical ties and economic ties with the United States.
Despite this, you did say just a couple minutes ago that you still believe that even though more companies are moving their headquarters or at least offices to Ireland, that this will have Brexit will have a negative impact on Ireland. Who in Ireland will be most hurt by Brexit?
I would think people in rural areas, because the gains will mainly be in our cities, where multinational companies will come in and establish themselves in Dublin, Cork, Galway, Waterford, Limerick, etc. That's where the gains will be registered. The losses will probably be in the food sector. In other words, at the moment, Ireland is a major food exporter to Britain. So, for example, you might have a company in rural Ireland that's producing pizzas for the big retail chains in Britain. Well, if the value of sterling goes down by 10%, if there are tariffs, that could be badly disrupted by Brexit. And therefore, I would expect that if there are to be losses, those losses, sadly, will be felt in rural areas, which is exactly the opposite to what you want to see happening. You want to see already probably there's too much concentration of economic activity in urban areas and not enough in rural areas. And it's a shame to find a situation where it's likely that the losses will be in the food production sector of our economy, which is no longer the dominant sector, but it's very important for obviously for rural areas where the food comes from.
You've been in Maine now for a couple of days. Is this your first visit to
Maine? First visit to Maine, yes.
What has struck you the most?
Well, the wonderful Irish community we have here. I've been wrapped in the warmest of embraces. I said today at the Maine Irish Heritage Centre, which is the best centre I've seen anywhere. It's fantastic. I said that that in all the travel I've done, and I've as ambassador to the UK before here, and as ambassador for the last 2 years in America, I've visited many, many, many Irish centres in Britain and the United States, and I don't believe I've been met with the kind of warm welcome that I've been met with here in Maine this past 2 days. It's been remarkable. People have turned up. I keep seeing the same people all the time. They seem to have given 2 days of their lives in order to accompany me around this city and to Long Island this morning.
So in the studio with us as well is Vinny O'Malley, who's executive director of the Maine Irish Heritage Center. Thanks for joining us, Vinny, and thanks for making this visit possible. How big of a deal is it to have Ambassador Mulhall here in Maine?
It was wonderful. Thank you for having us here today, Jennifer. It's been great. This has been a wonderful 2 days, whirlwind. We have kept it just completely full of activity for 2 days, and he's yet to lag a bit. I just want to thank the ambassador for those very kind words about talking about the Maine Irish Heritage Center, because we are very proud of it. We are original. We are, you know, my parents are from the west of Ireland, as so many others who came here from the west of Ireland and came to Portland and made it their homes, and now for generations, and so. We're extremely excited to have not only the ambassador, but his wife, Greta, who was also an Australian ambassador and who's been having a lot of, hopefully has had a bit of the crack here, has had a lot of the fun here with the ambassador.
Well, you know, as you mentioned, many Maine people already have a very close relationship with Ireland. 18% of people in Maine claim an Irish heritage.
That's a reasonable estimate. Yeah.
What do you hope will come out of this visit?
Well, you know, we had wonderful meetings with the Maine International Trade Center. We went down and visited the Eimskip Container Facility, and we had the Commissioner Van Note there. And so we're hoping that we are part of the North Atlantic, that we certainly hope that we would increase, maybe see some actual increases in trade, which would be wonderful. We had a very great meeting with President Cummings of USM, and we're encouraged that we can begin to have some discussions about having our education programs. So we think this is a major deal for the Maine Irish Heritage Center, and we're really, like I said, I couldn't express any more gratitude than I have already to the ambassador for coming.
Well, Vinny, thank you so much for being here and for making it so easy to bring Ambassador Mulhall here. Vinny O'Malley, Executive Director of the Maine Irish Heritage Center. I've spent some time on your Twitter feed, Ambassador. I've noticed you're quite active on Twitter,
I
but
am.
Your Twitter feed's very different than President Trump's. It seems to me you might post a poem from an Irish poet every single day.
Every day. I started doing this in 2015 for the 150th anniversary of the birth of William Butler Yeats, the great Irish Nobel Prize winning poet of whom I'm a particular enthusiast for his work. But at the end of that year, I was about to discontinue that practice of a daily poetry tweet. And people started saying to me, you must keep it going. So I decided I would keep it going, but that I would broaden it out to cover all Irish poets. So I sometimes tweet from poems by Irish monks from the Middle Ages, and I tweet from poets who are in their 20s at the moment. So I tweet the whole range of Irish poetry, including Yeats and Seamus Heaney and all these people. But it's, and I find I get great response to my poetry tweets. I never get any negative, nasty comments, or very rarely. And the people that like my poetry tweets really love them, and they send me some very nice comments. And I meet people who come over to me and say, you don't know me, but I follow you on Twitter and I love your poetry tweets. So it's actually been, to me, a very, very uplifting experience to become this tweeter of poetry. I have to say, I've never written a line of poetry, but I do have a lot of poets who are, I have poets who are friends of mine. And I've started also doing poetry readings, but choosing my favourite poems. I did one in New Hampshire at Tamworth Public Library there on Saturday. And I got a very big crowd turned up to hear me read from W.B. Yeats, Seamus Heaney, Patrick Kavanagh and so on, all the great Irish poets of the last 100 years. And I really enjoyed telling Ireland's story through poetry. That's my view, is that we have a strong literary heritage. And my job, part of my job, is to tell Ireland's story. And one of the ways I can tell it is through poetry and through literature.
The other item dominating your Twitter feed these last few days has been Shane Lowry's British Open victory. Give us a sense of the significance for you and for Ireland.
Well, I met Shane Lowry last year. I played golf with him in Washington. He's sponsored by an Irish company that I had done some work with, and they invited me to join him. I thought he was the most wonderful person I'd met, you know, totally unassuming. Totally, you know, not at all, you know, with an aura of stardom around him. I think it's been a great experience for Ireland the last week, because this is the first time the Open Championship has been played on the island of Ireland since 1950. And to have an Irish winner of the Open Championship has been wonderful on the island of Ireland. And the whole country was completely wrapped up in the drama of the last few days, especially when Shane Lowry led the field from the very beginning and was in contention. Most people probably before the championship thought that Rory McIlroy, who's a much more famous Irish golfer from Northern Ireland, that he would be the one contending. But Shane Lowry turned out to be the contender, and the whole country got behind him. I mean, and he's from a rural, he's from a small town in the centre of Ireland, and the club he belongs to has 200 members, so it's a small local club with no real pretensions. And for them, it's been a magnificent experience. The whole country has been charmed by, and his grandmother has become a kind of a media celebrity in Ireland because she was interviewed on Irish television, and I think her interview has gone viral. She admitted that she hadn't had a brandy in 10 years. She had two on Sunday and nearly killed her. And she also revealed that of various things about his childhood and so on. It was all, you know, very, very quintessentially Irish. And I think at the moment he's arriving in his hometown for a welcome home party. I would check it out on the internet if I were you. I'm sure it'll be a spectacular Irish party, and it'll be quite something quite well worth checking out, I believe. Yeah.
Well, we are going to take a quick break. We're talking with Daniel Mulhall, Ireland's ambassador to the US. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the Bowdoin College Museum of Art, where you can experience dual exhibits, Let's Get Lost and Listening Glass, with a smartphone. Bowdoin.edu/arts. By Crossroads, offering Maine's only gender-responsive residential treatment center for eating disorders and addiction. CrossroadsME.org. And Downeast Acadia, inviting you to get outdoors and discover your wild side. Hike, boat, camp, swim. Plan your visit at TrueMaine.net.
President Trump says the case is closed.
It's the greatest hoax ever in the history of our country.
But Democrats are still seeking answers.
Everybody wants justice. Everybody wants the president to be held accountable. Now, the former special counsel will testify about his investigation of Russian interference in the 2016 election. I'm Michelle Martin. Join me for the live special coverage of Robert Mueller's testimony from NPR News.
Coverage begins at 8:30 tomorrow morning on Maine Public Radio and is also available on Maine Public Television World Channel.
Solar energy has taken off across the U.S. Now, Nashville native Jason Carney wants black communities to know the energy savings and the green jobs are yours to be had, too.
No one controls the sun. You know, if someone could, they would, but they can't. Right now, all you need is knowledge.
I'm Mary Louise Kelly, spreading solar in Nashville this afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us this afternoon from 4 to 6:30 here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, Ireland's ambassador to the U.S., Daniel Mulhall. We invite you to join the conversation. Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Joining us on the line now is former U.S. Senator from Maine and Senate Majority Leader George Mitchell. He also served as U.S. Special Envoy for Northern Ireland and negotiated the Good Friday Accord. Thank you for calling in, Senator Mitchell.
Thank you for having me, Jennifer.
Senator Mitchell, what is your reaction to the election of Boris Johnson in the U.K., especially in relation to its potential impact on Northern Ireland?
The dispute, now known as Brexit, really has from the beginning been a struggle for control of power within the Conservative Party in the United Kingdom. It's not new. It's gone on for a quarter century, as the ambassador well knows. And it has now spread, however, to have potentially adverse consequences in the United Kingdom itself, including but not limited to Northern Ireland, in the Republic of Ireland, in Europe, in relations with the United States, and really around the world, given the importance of the European nations and the European Union combined. My hope is that, and it may be a long shot, but I think it's possible, that the incoming prime minister will be able to negotiate something close to what the prior prime minister, the outgoing prime minister, Mrs. May, did, and try to come up with not a hard no-deal Brexit, but a departure that permits the maximum possible continued relationship, economic, military, and political, between the United Kingdom and Europe. I believe that the creation of the European Union, along with many other post-World War II institutions led by the United States, has had a positive effect in stabilizing the European economies, providing for economic growth, defense cooperation with the United States and others. And while there are many problems with the European Union, as there are with all human institutions, I hope very much that it will remain in effect. I think it'd be best for the people of Europe, and it's very much in the interest of the United States.
I'd like to ask you and the ambassador the same question. Ireland and Northern Ireland have been at peace now for 20 years. Do you worry that Brexit might harm that peace?
No one can predict the future with certainty. Human affairs are always complex, and we are constantly surprised at things that happen. But in a society that has a long history of political violence, it would be unwise to do anything that might make it even remotely more possible that violence resumes. And so I think that a hard Brexit, that is the restoration of a fortified and strict border between Northern Ireland and Ireland, would be a huge step backward, creating the possibility of renewed negative attitude stereotyping. Now, 30,000 people a day cross the border. It's a lot of commerce and people and goods. It's had a remarkable effect at changing attitudes. Not completely. There's still Northern Ireland, still a segregated society. But I think it would be a very harmful and negative step. And I think it would also, and I believe the ambassador agrees with me, have a very harmful effect on Ireland, the Republic of Ireland, whose economy is very deeply integrated into that of the European Union and of the United Kingdom. And it would create, I think, trade and other unfortunate issues and be a big step backward.
Ambassador Mulhall.
Yes, I agree fully with Senator Mitchell, who, of course, is a man who commands legendary status in Ireland for the work he did. And I want to again take the opportunity to pay tribute to him for that great work he did 23 years ago, which has really saved thousands of lives in the past two decades. But I think Brexit has stirred things up in Northern Ireland in a very unhelpful way. Northern Ireland, we have peace. There hasn't been any systemic violence since the Good Friday Agreement. There have been a few unfortunate incidents, tragic incidents, but it has been at peace. But it hasn't been a settled society because there are still tensions and fragility. There hasn't been a government in Northern Ireland for the past 2.5 years, so that the Good Friday Agreement is not being properly implemented in the way it was meant to be, in the way that Senator Mitchell designed it. And Brexit just adds another complication to that already unstable mix. And it has created, it has raised the tension levels in Northern Ireland. And therefore, my hope would be that good sense prevails in Britain. And as Senator Mitchell said, that the new Prime Minister, Boris Johnson, finds a way to secure what he wants, what he says he wants, which is Britain's departure from the European Union, but in a way that will minimise the damage to Britain, to Europe, and to Ireland, North and South. And, of course, Northern Ireland is probably the most vulnerable part of the entire mix, because that's the place where the impact of Brexit could be most damaging of all.
Senator Mitchell, we so appreciate you calling in. Before we say goodbye, is there anything you would like to say to Ambassador Mulhall?
Just to thank the ambassador for many years of friendship, going all the way back to 20 years, as he mentioned, but also the outstanding job he's done in the United States representing Ireland. Ireland itself, of course, has political issues and parties and differences, but all in all, the government's done an outstanding job of maintaining forward progress, and this Brexit issue does very deeply concern the entire government, and I think the Ambassador is doing his best to move it in the right direction. So, Dan, it's good to be on the show with you, and I wish you the best. I say you're very fortunate to have spent a couple of days in Maine.
It's a wonderful place. It's a wonderful place. It really is.
Did they all tell you it's that warm all the time?
Well, it was certainly warm when I arrived on Sunday. But today I went out to Long Island and it was, shall we say, it was damp. It was a kind of a soft day that we're used to in Ireland.
Okay. Well, have a good
time. So I've had all kinds of weather here. But thank you very much for coming on. It's an honor.
Thank you. Thank you, Jennifer.
Thank you for calling in. That Senator George Mitchell, the former U.S. Senator from Maine, also the architect of the Good Friday Peace Accord. Calling in now is Dana Eidsness. She's the director of the Maine North Atlantic Development Office of the Maine International Trade Center. Thanks for calling in, Dana.
Yeah, thanks, Jen.
Dana, how important is Maine's trade relationship with Ireland? How much trade is there, and has it been growing?
Yeah, so Ireland's been an important and consistent trade partner, and Maine exported about $54 million in products to Ireland over the past 5 years. At the top of these exports, I'd say almost half, about 46%, would be classified as electric machinery and sound equipment. Other key export products to Ireland include articles of plastic, something that's classified as wadding and felt, ropes, pharmaceutical products. So it's a pretty diverse group of products going over there. On the other side, we import about $42 million in products or have imported about $42 million in products from Ireland over the past 5 years. We do see fluctuations sometimes from year to year, and our exports to Ireland saw an uptick last year of around $4 million in an increase. You know, I think there are variables in these fluctuations, and it would take some time to analyze, you know, on the higher end of these top exports are products that are very expensive. So, you know, the loss or change of one deal could make a big difference in the numbers. But anyway, for context and the scope of Maine's total export picture, last year, over 2,000 Maine companies exported $2.8 billion in goods to about 169 countries. So in 2018, Ireland was Maine's 29th largest export market. So there's definitely room for growth here.
Yeah, for sure.
Tell us about the economic partnership agreement Maine has with County Cork in Ireland.
Yeah, so you know, as we mentioned earlier in the show, people with Maine have had longstanding relationships in Ireland. You mentioned 18% of the state's population traces their ancestry to Ireland, although if Ambassador Mulhall just saw 40 Murphys on Long Island, I imagine that that percentage could be a little bit higher. So there are family connections, business connections. The small town of Goleen in West Cork sent 14 of its Coast Guard officers to Portland a couple of years ago to march in our St. Patrick's Day parade, which was a beautiful sight. And very funny also because Goleen had groupies at the St. Patrick's Day parade. There were people standing along the sides of the road with "We Love Goleen" signs. So lots of strong connections to that part of Ireland. So, you know, for these and many other reasons, Maine entered an agreement with County Cork in 2018, which formally designates a relationship between the regions of Cork County and the state of Maine across some areas of common interest. And we met with representatives from Cork County Council and decided that this agreement is meant to be a foundation for business development connectivity for our life sciences, marine technology, fisheries, aquaculture, ocean freight and shipping, food and beverage, education and tourism sectors. There were just so many sectors where we had good synergies that it's a very broad agreement. So the document underscores Maine and County Cork's commitment to remain connected and interested in dynamic exchanges across really three pillars of engagement, and those would be business, academia, and tourism.
Well, Dana, thanks so much for calling in. Dana Eidsness directs the Maine North Atlantic Development Office of the Maine International Trade Center. Before I let you go, though, Ambassador, anything to say? You met them at the Maine International Trade Center yesterday.
Well, first of all, I met two companies yesterday, both run by Irish citizens, Irish-born people living in Maine. One of them is a Maine company that has its European offices in Ireland, and the other is an Irish company that has its sub-office here in Maine. So it's not just a question of trade. In fact, the biggest development in Irish-US economic relations in recent times has been the flow of investment. There are now 750 U.S. companies with investments in Ireland, and there are more than 500 Irish companies with investments in the U.S., and between them, they employ 100,000 people in every one of the 50 U.S. states, and that trend is accelerating. Last year, we estimate about 60 new companies came in from Ireland, establishing a base for themselves in the United States. So Maine has an opportunity, if you like, to attract some of those companies here on the basis that there is an Irish heritage, there is a connection with Ireland, and also that your cost structures here in Maine are probably lower than they are in other parts of the United States where maybe bigger cities generate higher cost structures. So we had about 3 weeks ago, there was a Select USA conference, and there were companies from all over the world in Washington, D.C., and they were here to scope out opportunities for themselves. And we had 40 Irish companies over here looking for opportunities. So that's why this partnership with Cork is very important, because Maine can reach out to Cork companies and say, by the way, if you were thinking of coming to America to invest, why don't you think about Maine? We can offer you, the following. And we can offer you an attractive place in which to live and work, and a cost structure that's more competitive than it would be in the larger urban areas of the United States.
Dana, anything to add?
Yeah, and I would say that's definitely something that is written out in the agreement. Under the business section of the agreement, we are looking to have a reciprocal sort of program where we would have support from Maine for Cork companies looking to enter the U.S. market, and that would be reciprocated for Maine companies and institutions looking for business development and investment opportunities in Ireland as well. We've discussed the possibility of providing sort of mutual short-term hot desk space for our companies wishing to do business in Maine and Cork. And on the academic side, there was specific interest from Cork to use Maine as an entry point for Cork startups to connect with New England's life sciences ecosystem. So in particular, for research partnerships in the Boston area's life sciences corridor, you know, how could we leverage and host these relationships and include Maine businesses and researchers? We're exploring that idea with them.
All right. Well, thanks so much for calling again. Dana Eidsness, she directs the Maine North Atlantic Development Office at the Maine International Trade Center. We're going to get to one more call before our break. We're going to go to John in Rockport. Hi, John. Go ahead.
Hi. I'm in Rockport now, but I'm from Searsmont. My question is, are you there?
Yes.
Yes. My question is, I'm a dual citizen. I have dual citizenship with Ireland, and I wanted to know how that would affect me traveling and living in the UK.
Okay. It won't affect you at all because under an agreement that was reached by the two governments a few months ago, what's called the common travel area will continue to be respected. So it means at the moment, in fact, for the last 100 years, Irish citizens have been able to live and work in the UK. And that arrangement will continue after Brexit. No matter what happens to Brexit, the rights of Irish citizens in the UK and the rights of UK citizens in Ireland will not change.
John, thank you for your call.
I was going to say that would make Irish citizenship very unique in some way.
It does. It does, because no other European Union country will have that arrangement with the UK. But our European partners have generously acknowledged that the special geographical links and historical links between Ireland and the UK means that they don't want to cut across this by causing any complications for Irish citizens getting those rights in the future.
Thank you, John. If you'd like to join the conversation, the phone number 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. We're going to take another quick break. When we come back, more of your comments and questions.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do the Portland Food Co-op, a community-owned market featuring a wide selection of local and organic products open to everyone 7 days a week. Buy fresh eggs daily, a Maine company committed to helping you to raise the backyard chicken flock of your dreams. FreshEggsDaily.com. And Maine Farmland Trust, celebrating 20 years of growing the future for farming. Share your stories and get involved at MaineFarmlandTrust20th.org. Tonight at 8 o'clock on Maine Public Television offers you another chance to watch Chasing the Moon, American Experience, the second part of the three-part series that chronicles the space race with the Soviet Union and the failures and successes of the Apollo program. Then at 10 o'clock tonight, it's Year in Space, which takes viewers behind the scenes of astronaut Scott Kelly's 12-month stay on the International Space Station, where he tested human limits for space travel. Coming up at 2 o'clock after Maine Calling, it's World Affairs, Facebook's Libra, and the Future of Money at 2 o'clock following Maine Calling here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, we are talking with Ireland's ambassador to the United States, Daniel Mulhall. Join our conversation at 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. We'll go to John calling from Orland. Hi, John. Go ahead. John in Orland, are you there? Shoot, we seem to have lost John. Hopefully he can call back. We'll go then to an email. This is from Ellen. It has been said that Ireland's greatest export is her people. Will you talk, please, about another notable Irish export, her culture, the writers, musicians, artists, filmmakers who are recognized around the world?
It is true that the export of people was an Irish specialty for so long. Now, of course, in today's Ireland, one in six people living in Ireland today was not born in Ireland. So we have 17% of our population born outside of our state. And that's because of the success of our economy and our European Union membership, which means that Europeans have the right to live and work in Ireland without any restrictions. In relation to culture, I've always believed that our culture was a unique asset for Ireland. And that's why I've always tried to wherever I've been in the world, I've tried to talk about Irish culture. At the moment, I'm writing a blog about James Joyce's Ulysses, which is recognized as the most important novel in the English language of the 20th century. And it's a novel that a lot of people have trouble in reading, but I've actually tried to make it accessible. I've already posted 8 blogs in this series, and I'm going to continue it for the next year. And my aim is to just use my blog to encourage more people to connect with Irish literature, not just the literature of the past, but also the present. We have a lot of very fine contemporary writers who've been widely acclaimed all over the world. So I take the view that our literature is part of our national brand. And then we have our music. Last night at the Main Irish Heritage Centre, I heard the most wonderful performance of Irish traditional music by two locally based musicians who have won prizes for their skill at playing Irish music. I saw some local Maine children dancing Irish traditional dancing in at a standard that was world class. So we're lucky that our culture has the capacity to draw people in from different parts of the world who don't have to be Irish by birth or even by heritage in order to appreciate our literature, our music and our dance.
John in Orland has called back. Hi, John. Go ahead. You're on Main Calling.
Hi. Thank you. I'm sorry about that. I have no idea what that was about. But thank you, Jennifer, for bringing Senator Mitchell back on the air. How great to hear his voice, and he sounds good. Ambassador, I'm wondering, personally, my wife and I have relatives in Northern Ireland and the Republic, and we love Ireland. We love visiting them and visiting your countries. I'm wondering about unification, if there's any hope. And also, looking at our current situation in this country and how things sometimes look like they are very, very dismal in the future for political stability, can you talk about immigration policy?
Well, diplomats are eternal optimists. We have to be, because we have to deal with issues that are not always don't always have happy endings, and we try to create happy endings when we can. Unification is something that most people in the Ireland I represent favour, but they accept the terms of the Good Friday Agreement, where again Senator Mitchell very wisely removed the issue of unification from the current debate and placed it into the future. And the Good Friday Agreement says that at some time in the future, if there appears to be a majority in Northern Ireland in favour of Irish unity, there will be a referendum held, and the British government will respect that referendum if it votes in favour of Irish unity. And that's the situation. That hasn't changed as a result of Brexit. Now, Brexit may have changed people's minds in Northern Ireland, but at the moment we don't see any sort of prospect that a referendum in the near future would be productive. In fact, our view is that we need to get over the hurdle of Brexit and then move on and deal with issues in the future, including Irish unity. In relation to immigration policy, well, in the European Union, as I mentioned earlier, all European citizens are entitled to live and work in all other European countries freely. And that's why most of our immigrants in Ireland come from other European Union countries, and we have a free labour market in Europe. And that's been the advantage of many European countries, including Ireland. And interestingly, in Ireland, there is no resistance to immigration. There's no party or even individual politician who's tried to stir up the issue of immigration and create public resistance to it, because it hasn't, it wouldn't be, I think, a winner, because most Irish people remember that the Irish were once a nation of emigrants. They weren't always well received in the countries they arrived in, and we don't want to make the same mistake in Ireland in the 21st century.
John, thank you for your call. We have an email from Gia. As someone of Irish descent, as many are in Maine, I wanted to applaud Ireland for their recent progress in passing laws for gay marriage, women's reproductive rights, and more. Also, does Ambassador Mulhall approve of allowing the population of the UK to have another referendum?
Well, it's not for me to decide what the population of the UK should do. If they were to have another referendum and they were to decide to remain in the EU, that decision would be widely cheered in Ireland, including by me. But that is not a matter for us. Yes, the climate of opinion in Ireland has definitely changed. I think 30 years ago, you could validly have said Ireland was a conservative country. The last decade or so, we have become more relaxed. We have become more open, more tolerant, more pluralistic. The reasons for that change of mind in Ireland is something that probably the historians will have to analyse in the future. But there has been a definite shift towards a more liberal outlook on the issues you mentioned.
All right. An email from Travis. I've always had a deep love of Irish music, traditional and modern. Why do you think Irish music continues to haunt, mystify, and inspire every corner of the world?
I think the reason has to do with America, in my view, in that in Ireland we had a rural culture and music was an important part of that culture. And that culture was transplanted, moved across the Atlantic to the United States, and it picked up momentum here. And a lot of the influences came back. So I think the influence of America and the immigrant Irish here in America and their carriage of Irish traditional music across the Atlantic helped to make that music a global phenomenon rather than a local enthusiasm.
Facebook comment from Will. How do we combat the migration of businesses to Ireland in name only to avoid corporate tax in America while respecting the right of Ireland to become an appetizing home for business and growth?
Well, we do not encourage, in fact, we discourage and we take action against companies that are trying to be in Ireland purely for reasons of taxation advantages. The reason for companies coming to Ireland, there are four reasons. The first is that we provide a base within the European Union, and not everything. A global company, an American company that wants to be global, has to have bases around the world, and we believe Ireland is the best place for that company to be in the European Union. The second is that we have a highly educated English-speaking population. That's what companies tend to want. They want talent. Google in Dublin has 8,000 people working for them, 66 language groups within their campus in Dublin. That you can only get in a place like Dublin, where we can draw people in from all over the European Union. The third factor is our government is very positive and very open and very supportive of inward investment. And the fourth factor is our corporate tax rate of 12.5%. It's a flat rate across the board. But the profits that American companies make in Ireland are now transferred back to the United States, and they help to sustain the American economy. And by the way, I mean, the international tax regime is being reformed gradually, and we are fully supportive of work within the OECD to make the international corporate tax system more open and transparent. We feel we have nothing to hide in Ireland. Ours is an open and transparent system, and we believe that internationally we need a system that works, that ensures that companies pay fair share of their profits in tax, but also that there is an opportunity for countries like Ireland to offer competitive opportunities for companies that want to invest in the European Union and choose Ireland as their preferred location.
We'll go to Leslie, who's calling from Ellsworth. Hi, Leslie. Go ahead.
Hi. We travel around the UK quite a bit, but spent our very first visit to Ireland last year and noticed what seemed to be a lack of security in places. Like, we visited the National Gallery and we could walk around with our backpacks. We didn't have to check them. And there didn't seem to be, like, cement barriers around the government buildings. And I think that people must assume that they're safe. We were curious about this, and I wondered if you could speak to that. Thank you.
Well, we are, I think, as a nation, we are more relaxed. We have a more open. I mean, for example, our politicians don't, our ministers, our prime minister don't travel around with security details of the kind you find in other countries, including the United States. It's not that we're, you know, we're not complacent, because obviously anywhere in the world now you can be susceptible to attack by people who have a desire to damage the fabric of our societies. But in Ireland, we have chosen to adopt a more relaxed attitude towards security. And I know what you mean. There are many places in Ireland where, you know, the galleries and museums, we don't have bag checks of the way in the way you have here in the United States, and indeed in other parts of the world. Our security services obviously keep a close watch on the threat levels, and they will inform the government appropriately of any raised level of threat. But so far, we haven't had any reason to impose the kind of security, rigorous security systems that other parts of the world have found it necessary to impose.
A tweet from Deirdre. As a life science professional, Morrison visa immigrant to Boston 26 years ago, now a seasonal resident in Lovell, Maine, and U.S. citizen, we hope the Irish will continue to be well received in the U.S.
Well, we have we are working with Congress to try to get access for Irish citizens to an E3 visa program, which is currently only eligible or only available to Australian citizens. And we hope that that may succeed in the coming months in getting through Congress. It wouldn't mean any additional visas overall, but it would mean that Irish people would have increased opportunities. The view that I take is that the heritage of Irish America is so strong that it would be nice to have a continuing small flow of people coming in from Ireland to the United States. And that's why this kind of visa program would be an advantage. But I mean, there'll probably never be the kind of mass immigration again that was from Ireland in the past. And no one would want that, because the success of Ireland is something that Irish Americans should be proud of. And in my experience, most Irish Americans are proud of the fact that Ireland has now become a very different country from the one there grandparents, great-grandparents, and great-great-grandparents left in conditions of relative misery all those years ago.
Sure, the reasons for immigration are not there anymore.
That's true. That's true. But Irish people still have a desire to travel and to see other countries and so on. My hope would be that people will continue to come here on a short-term basis for maybe 10 years and then go back to Ireland and bring back to Ireland an understanding of America and be a human link between our two countries for the future.
Well, thank you so much for being here. That is Ambassador Daniel Mulhall. He has Ireland's ambassador to the United States. Sandra Harris ran the board today. Ella Boyd took your calls. Today's show will be rebroadcast again tonight at 8 o'clock. I'm Jennifer Rooks. You've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.